This morning I want to speak on a pastor's wife, and I want to give you a window into the life of a pastor's wife, and hopefully explain some things to you that you probably didn't know, some things you probably did, some things you probably don't, and just give you a better appreciation for a pastor's wife. I've chosen to do this when my wife is not here on purpose, because I didn't want her to feel in the spotlight, I guess. So let me first of all give you the purpose for this sermon. It is true that too often pastors' wives are overlooked, underappreciated, misunderstood, and are the subject of unreasonable and unbiblical expectations. Now, everything that I have to say today doesn't apply to every pastor's wife. Some pastors' wives bear different burdens than others do. And I've talked to a number of pastors' wives. So these are mainly things that I think, like, real pastors' wives deal with, because there are other problems that pastors' wives out in these other megachurch things, I'm sure they have all kinds of problems that have nothing to do really with being a pastor's wife in a biblical sense. So what I'm talking about applies to real pastors' wives. A pastor's wife is crucial to the success of his ministry. She can either make him or break him. And that's absolutely true. If you take a man, a pastor, that has a rotten wife, she will destroy his ministry. There's just no doubt about it. The job is hard enough without having, hard enough with having good support. If you take a job that's hard and then you have no support or you have negative support, definitely pastor's wife could tear him down. On the other hand, she can also build him up and make him to be a better pastor. It's necessary for churches to have a biblical view of the role of the pastor's wife, so that they understand the very difficult position she occupies and can be there to support her. I don't think most people probably know the struggles that a pastor's wife goes through, because most people are not pastor's wives. So, there's a lot of people that suffer and struggle with a lot of things that none of us know anything about, because we're not in their position, and most people don't just talk about everything that they suffer and struggle with. You can see somebody one day that has a smile on their face, and little did you know, a couple hours ago they were in a puddle of tears at home, and you have no idea. Well, a pastor's wife is the same thing. She suffers with a lot of things that you probably are not aware of. And I'm hopefully going to make you aware of some of the things in this study today. I've interviewed four pastors' wives in preparation for this sermon to get their perspective on this. Some of the thoughts in this study are my own, just from my own observation. I've been in churches for a long time. I've been around lots of pastors' wives. I have one myself. So I know a lot of this from personal experience. But I also wanted to talk to other pastors' wives and get their perspective and see what their story was. So it's my hope that after this study, you will have a better appreciation for your pastor's wife. So it's a fact that a pastor's wife, has the most important job in the world that any woman can have. Let me say that again. A pastor's wife has the most important job in the world that any woman can have. Now, you may disagree with that, and that's fine. You're free to be wrong. Let me first of all show you what a pastor's wife is not. A pastor's wife is not a co-pastor. She is not the pastor's secretary. She is not there to relay messages from church members to the pastor. She is not to be in charge of a, quote, ministry. That is not her job. She is not to be a church counselor. That's not her job either. She's not even to lead the women of the church. Show me in the Bible where it says, pastors' wives lead the women in the church. It's not her job. And it is not her job to work outside the home to help the pastor provide for the needs of the family. That is not her job. I will tell you what a pastor's wife's job is in one sentence. A pastor's wife's job is to take care of the pastor. That is her job. If you look in Genesis 2 and verse 18, and in this, basically, her job is the job of every married woman. Genesis 2:18, and the Lord said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an help meet for him, and help suitable." A man's wife should be his helper, there to help him, to take care of him. A pastor's wife's job is the same as every married woman's job. It's to be a keeper at home. Titus 2 and verse 5. Titus 2 and verse 5. Paul here exhorts the aged women that they are to teach the younger women, and obviously teach them by leading by example. And they are to teach them, in verse 4, that they may teach the younger women, it says, to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. That's what a married woman's job is, to be a keeper at home, to be obedient to her husband. So now let me tell you what a pastor's wife's, quote, ministry, unquote, consists of. And it consists of the extremely important job of loving the pastor, being emotionally and physically supportive of the pastor, providing a happy and comfortable home for the pastor, cooking, brewing coffee, doing dishes, cleaning, doing laundry, grocery shopping, taking care of the children, and helping to educate the children. That's a pastor's wife's ministry, if she's going about her life biblically. That's not the ministry of most pastors' wives and most of these churches out there. They've got all kinds of other stuff that they're supposed to be doing. But right there, that's her ministry. So what does the Bible say about a pastor's wife? And interestingly, it doesn't say much. There's not really much said about pastors' wives in the Bible, but there is some, and I'm going to show you what it does say. It specifically teaches a few things, and then by a little bit of reasoning, we can see that it teaches some other things. So first of all, what it specifically teaches. It specifically teaches that a pastor, if a pastor's married, he can only have one wife. So in other words, the pastor's wife doesn't share her position. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 2. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 2 says, "A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach." So a pastor must be the husband of one wife. He can't have more than one wife. Paul reiterated this to Titus in Titus 1 and verse 6. When he said, "If any be blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of riot and unruly." So a pastor, if he's married, can only be married to one woman. Now, a pastor doesn't have to be married. You know, this was the case with Jesus. Jesus was a pastor. Did you know that? I think I just mentioned that in a sermon the other day. In Hebrews 13 and verse 20, I'll just show you, he was a pastor, and we all know that he wasn't married. That stupid, foolish Da Vinci Code book by Dan Brown notwithstanding, Jesus was not married. Hebrews 13 and verse 20 says, "Now the God of peace that brought again from the dead our Lord Jesus, that great shepherd of the sheep through the blood of the everlasting covenant." A pastor and a shepherd are the same thing. A pastor is a tender of sheep. That's what a shepherd is. Jesus is a pastor. 1 Peter 2 and verse 25. Just give you one more. 1 Peter 2 and verse 25. "For ye were as sheep going astray, but now are returned unto the shepherd and bishop of your souls." Shepherd's a pastor. A bishop is another name for the office of a pastor. Bishop, elder, overseer, pastor, steward. I might have missed one. Preacher. They're all the same name. They're all different names for the same office. So Jesus is a pastor, an overseer of the flock. And he, of course, was not married. Paul likewise was not married. 1 Corinthians 7, 7 through 8. Paul was a pastor. He was an apostle. He was a teacher. He was a preacher. He held all of those offices. 1 Corinthians 7, 7 through 8. Paul says, "For I would that all men were even as I myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner and another after that. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. But if they cannot contain, let them marry, for it's better to marry than to burn." Clearly, he's saying that he is unmarried, and he would that other people were like him, unmarried. He goes on to say that he that is unmarried can care for the things of the world. He that is married cares for the things of his wife, and likewise for the wife. She that's unmarried cares for the Lord. She that is married cares for the things of her husband. So that's why he recommends that if you have that gift, to remain unmarried and serve the Lord. But the point is that Paul and Jesus were pastors, and they were unmarried. So therefore, when it says the pastor has to be the husband of one wife, that means if he's married, he has to have only one wife. I held up both of my fingers there. One wife. You notice that the language there in 1 Timothy 3, 2 and Titus 1, 6, it says the pastor must be the husband of one wife, meaning that he cannot be the husband of more than one wife. It doesn't say that he cannot have been, he has to have been the husband of one wife. It says that he must be the husband of one wife. He can presently only be the husband of one wife. This means that a pastor cannot be a bigamist or a polygamist, so he can't be married to two or three or more women at the same time. A pastor also could not divorce his wife and marry another, because he'd be the husband of two wives and be bound in covenant to two different women, except in the case of adultery. Look in Matthew 19 and verse 9. Matthew 19 and verse 9. Jesus said, "And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." So if a man puts away his wife for any other cause except for adultery, for her fornication, and marries another, he is now committing adultery. Why is he committing adultery? Because he's married to the first wife. Even though he puts her away, the marriage bond is still intact. So God considers him married to the first wife. Now he goes and marries a second wife, and guess what? He just committed adultery because he's still married to the other wife. He's married to both of them in the eyes of God. He's bound in covenant to two different women. If adultery happened, that broke the covenant, and he's free to put her away and marry another without being an adulterer. So a pastor could not just divorce his wife because they don't get along and marry another. He's the husband of two wives then. He can't do that. And neither can the rest of you, for that matter, if you want to be a member of the church. A pastor could have had more than one wife during the course of his life. For instance, a pastor could be a widower who remarried, and this is certainly permissible in Romans 7, 2 through 3. Romans 7, 2 through 3. It says, "For the woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband so long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, she should be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man." The same is true for a man, right? It's true for either spouse. When the spouse is alive, you can't go marry another. Once the spouse dies, you're free from that law of the covenant that you're bound to, and you're free to marry another. So a pastor could have been married, whether before the ministry or during the ministry. His wife could die either before he was in the ministry or after, and he could remarry, and he's still the husband of one wife. Right? That doesn't mean that when it says the husband of one wife, it means that he is the husband. Not that he was in the past, like that he's had more than one, but he is the husband of one wife. A pastor could have also been the victim of adultery and put away his wife and married another. Matthew 19:9, we just looked at that. That could have happened prior to the ministry. I guess it could have happened after the ministry. I think that would pose some problems for a pastor if your wife commits adultery while you're in the ministry. For me, I don't think that I would probably want to continue in the ministry under those circumstances, because, you know, usually there's, not that the, it doesn't justify it, but usually there are problems in the marriage when that happens, and the wife or the husband is not having needs met, is not happy, and so on. So if that happens to a pastor, it's kind of hard for him to continue to preach to other people when, you know, his own situation didn't work out very well. So anyway, that's a side note. I'm not saying it's impossible, but anyway, that could be a possibility. Pastor could have been married maybe even before he was converted or something, and then his wife ran around on him. He put her away because of adultery, and then later married another. He's perfectly able to do that. And then a pastor could have been married to an unbeliever who abandoned him prior to being called to the ministry, and then he remarried after that when he was free from her. That's in 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 15. Now, this one could not happen after you're in the ministry for one reason, because a pastor cannot be married to an unbeliever. So this couldn't happen after the ministry. It could have happened before he was in the ministry. 1 Corinthians 7:15, but if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or a sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God hath called us to peace. The bondage there is the bond of marriage. So if a believer is married to an unbeliever and the unbeliever departs, then the believer is not under bondage. God is not going to hold him to that covenant any longer. So that could have been a case. So in these three cases, the pastor would be free of his first marriage in the eyes of God, and therefore would be the husband of one wife, being presently bound to only one woman. Now, the next thing the Bible tells us about a pastor's wife is that she must be submissive to her husband, to her pastor. 1 Timothy 3:4-5. 1 Timothy 3:4-5. These are the qualifications for a pastor. It says, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? So it says he has to rule his own house. He has to have authority over his own house. And a man's house would include his wife and children. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8 says, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Now, if a man, if house here doesn't include wife, does that mean that a man could not provide for the needs of his wife and be okay? As long as he provided for his kids, his wife's over here emaciated, starving to death, but he's all right because, you know, his children are the only thing that are his house. Obviously not. His wife is part of his house too. So therefore, his house needs to be in subjection to him. His wife needs to be in subjection to him. A house is a building for human habitation, especially a building that is the ordinary dwelling place of a family. Then, further down in the definition, that was referring to the actual domicile, the physical place. Number 5 is the persons living in one dwelling, the inmates of a house collectively, a household or family. So in other words, he has to have his family in subjection with all gravity. He has to rule his family, including his wife. Of course, this is not popular these days in the age of women's liberation and all that, and people think that we should have these 50-50 marriages where men and women are equally in authority and all this nonsense, but that's not what the Bible teaches at all. A pastor must rule his family well, including his wife. A pastor must lead his wife, not follow her. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 5. A lot of men follow their wives these days. Men are supposed to lead their wives, not follow them. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 5. Paul says, have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? You see, the brethren of the Lord, like James and Judas and Simeon, and those men, they were married. Cephas is Peter. Cephas was married. We read about Peter's wife's mother being sick. Paul says that he and Barnabas had the right, just like the other apostles, to lead about a wife. Of course, he just takes it for granted that a pastor or a husband leads his wife. He doesn't follow her. A pastor's wife, therefore, should be meek and submissive, not domineering and controlling, just like all Christian women should be. Ephesians 5, 22 through 24. If there's one thing that gets my ire up, it is domineering and controlling women. Can't stand it. Ephesians 5, 22 through 24. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. You know, is it any wonder why churches these days are not subject unto Christ and just do whatever they feel like? Don't churches just do whatever they feel like? They just make any old program up they feel like. They worship God any way they feel like. They use whatever Bible they feel like. They call whatever kind of a man or woman or sodomite or transgender freak to be their pastor they feel like. They do whatever they want. Why? Because they're not subject unto Christ. Why are churches not subject unto Christ? Because we've had 100 years of women, of wives, not being subject to their husbands. That's part of the reason. They're to be subject to their husbands in everything. That's what it says. 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6. Of course, everything is qualified. The husband can't require something of his wife that God would forbid and so on. That's obvious. I've talked about that lots of times. 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives. Here's a Christian woman married to an unchristian man, to a man that does not obey the word, and she's still supposed to submit to him. Of course, if he tells her you can't go to church, she doesn't submit to that. If he says you can't pray, you don't submit to that. If he says you're going to celebrate Christmas with my kids, you don't submit to that, right? There's all kinds of things that the unbeliever might say that would be contrary to God's law that you don't submit to. But you know what? When he says, hey, you got $300 for groceries this month, make it work. You submit to that. Because he's the head. While they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair, or of wearing of gold, or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit. That's what a woman is supposed to be adorned with, a meek and quiet spirit, not a loud, domineering, controlling spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. You know, when Sarah called Abraham Lord, she did so in her heart. You can read about it in Genesis. She said it in her heart to herself. She wasn't boasting, putting on a show, saying, oh my Lord, showing everybody how submissive she is, while in the background she's being stubborn and obstinate and hard-hearted. She looked at him as her Lord, lowercase l, in her heart. Unfortunately, it is all too common in many churches for pastors' wives to be a domineering, controlling busybody. That happens in a lot of churches. I have been in churches like that. I remember one time we had, this is a long time ago, this is a Christian Missionary Alliance so-called fake church, but anyway, there they were looking for a new pastor and they had a pastor come to candidate. And after the church service, they had a meal and people were asking questions of the candidate for pastor. And they asked him, some old lady said, well, how do you do ministering to old people or something? And his wife, I've probably told you this story before, his wife jumps in, blurts out, can I answer this question? he does really well. No, no, no. And she starts going on. And I mean, I didn't know hardly anything back then. I knew that ain't right. Why in the world would you interrupt your husband, who is the pastor, to answer a question directed at him? I mean, I wouldn't have called that guy to be the pastor. I don't care if he could preach like Charles Spurgeon. You are not qualified to be a pastor in my mind because your wife is not in subjection with all gravity. Your wife is out of line. Never want to call a man to be a pastor who has a domineering wife. That would be a recipe for disaster. Now, here are some things that can be reasoned from the scriptures regarding a pastor's wife. So if you look in 1 Timothy 3, 8 through 13, 1 Timothy 3, 8 through 13, and by the way, do you know what the response was of the old ladies in the church when his wife blurted out and usurped the authority of her husband right in front of everybody? Oh, yay! They were all so happy. 1 Timothy 3, 8 through 13. So I don't know if I read it in the sermon today. I don't think I read the whole passage there about a pastor, but in verses 1 through 8, 1 through 7, it gives the qualification for a pastor. We'll get through some of those verses yet today here. And then in verse 8, he goes on to give the qualifications for the deacons. And he opens that passage there with the word likewise. He says, likewise must the deacons be grave, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre, holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience, and let these also first be proved. Then let them use the office of a deacon, being found blameless. Even so must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. Let the deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children and their own houses well. So by use of the word likewise, we see here that the things that apply to the deacon apply to the pastor and vice versa. Likewise means in likewise, in the same manner. So what it's saying there is in the same manner as the pastoral qualifications were, so is the deacon. I don't know what the adjective would be there of deacon, the deacon. Diaconate or something, I forget. But anyway, his qualifications would apply to the pastor and vice versa. That's why, for one thing, there where it says, let these first be proved and let them use the office of a deacon, we apply that to pastors. Pastors have to be proved. And Paul said, you know, the proof of him, because he served as a father or as a son with the father, talking about Timothy. So anyway, here in this passage with the deacons, which applies to pastors, it gives qualifications for their wives there in verse 11. Now, there are certain qualifications that are specific to the office of the elder or the pastor, such as being apt to teach, which would not apply to deacons, right? So you have to be a little discerning with these qualifications here. But many of the qualifications are the same, such as the family-related ones. You look at the family-related qualifications of a pastor and a deacon, they're basically the same. Both a pastor and a deacon have to be the husband of one wife. 1 Timothy 3:2 and 3:12 says the same thing. Both have to rule their children and their house as well. 1 Timothy 3:4 through 5, which we've already read, and verse 12, which we just read. They both have to rule their houses, their wives and their children. So we see there in verse 11 that the wife of a deacon has to meet certain qualifications, and by way of the word likewise, the pastor's wife also has to meet these qualifications, and there's four of them there. Even so, must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. So those are four qualifications that a woman has to meet in order to be a pastor's wife. So in other words, if a church was looking to call a man to the ministry, and he's already married, they not only have to look at him, they have to look at his wife. And they have to see if his wife meets these qualifications. And if his wife doesn't meet these qualifications, he's not qualified. The two are one flesh. You know, when you call a pastor, you get his wife too. Granted, she doesn't have a position of leadership in the church or anything like that, but God does have requirements of her. And for good reason, because if she doesn't meet these qualifications, she's not going to be a good wife to him. She's not going to be a support of him. She's going to be a detriment to him. So let's look at these. The first one is grave. A pastor's wife has to be grave. Grave, when speaking of persons, it's having weight or importance, influential, respected, sometimes used as an epithet of respectful address. When you're speaking of authors, books, maxims, advice, things like that, grave means weighty or authoritative. When you're speaking of persons, their character, aspect, speech, or behavior, as it is here, grave means marked by weighty dignity, of reverend seriousness, in latter use with wider sense of temperament, feeling, or their manifestations, it means serious, not mirthful or jocular, opposed to gay. Gay in the original sense of the word, of course. So a pastor's wife must be serious, influential, and respectable. My wife is a woman of principle who takes her life and her Christianity very seriously. My wife is actually a very serious woman. She's a thinker. She ponders her way. She's a deep thinker. She really considers her ways. I'm blessed to have the wife that I have. You may have noticed this. You may not have noticed this. But most of the time when my wife comes into church, you know what she does? She goes right over there and sits down. If people come and talk to her, she talks to them. But she doesn't mill around with the rest of the church and talk and yuck it up with everybody. The reason for this, that she doesn't talk with people before church, but rather sits by herself, is not because she's unsocial, but rather because she wants to prepare her heart and mind to worship God and not be distracted by other topics of conversation. That's why she does that. You may not have known that, but I know that because she told me. Because I know how it is. You get talking about all manner of other stuff, who knows what, and get your mind all distracted, and then you try to sit down and worship God when your mind's running 100 miles an hour about who knows what. I wish I could do what she does. I can't. I just don't have that option, really. But someday, when my ship comes in, and I just checked, it hasn't left the port yet. But someday, when it comes in, and I do build us a church building, and I say when I do, Lord willing, which is probably not going to happen, but someday when the ship comes in, I would like to build a little room behind the pulpit, and I'd soundproof it, and you wouldn't see me before church. I'd be sitting back there in my little room. I'd be praying. I'd be reading the Bible. I'd be reviewing my outline. I'd be preparing for church, preparing my heart for worship, and I'd walk out. I'd walk up to the pulpit at 9 o'clock and call the assembly, and then I'd talk to you after church. And this is not just my crazy idea. Pastor Mott, I've heard him say the same thing. He wishes he could do the same, very same thing. But anyway, I can't do that. Not now, anyway. But that's why my wife does that. She's a serious person. A man who doesn't have a serious and respectable wife is not fit for the ministry. I'm not saying, obviously, she, you know her, she laughs, she jokes, she has a good time. I'm not saying that you cannot, that a serious person can't have a fun side to them too. But what you don't want is a wife of a pastor that's just all about laughing and having fun and is not serious ever about anything. That is not a woman that's fit to be a pastor's wife. The next thing a pastor's wife has to be is not a slanderer. A slanderer is one who slanders, one who devises or utters false or malicious statements about a person, etc., a defamer or a calumniator. A pastor's wife must not be a woman who spreads malicious rumors about people. Can you imagine if a church had a pastor's wife that spread malicious rumors about other people in the church? That church would be dead on the vine in no time. I mean, obviously, this is a qualification for a really good reason. Now, this is a necessary qualification because some women are known for their propensity to whisper, backbite, and gossip about others. Now, look, I know women don't have a monopoly on that market, but they definitely have a big market share, all right? I think everybody knows that. A man who has a wife who spreads rumors about others is not fit for the ministry. The next thing a pastor's wife has to be is sober. Sober is moderate, temperate, avoiding excess in respect of the use of food and drink, not given to the indulgence of appetite. It's also, when you're speaking of demeanor or speech, etc., it's grave, serious, solemn, indicating or implying a serious mind or purpose. So a pastor's wife must be moderate in her appetite and serious in mind and purpose. I'm going to show you how a pastor has to be all these things too, which is interesting. But both a pastor and his wife have to be moderate. You know, a pastor and his wife that are morbidly obese, that couldn't walk through the door beside each other because they're both like this big around. No, they're not fit. He's not fit to be a pastor. This is a necessary qualification because... I'm looking at the wrong part of the outline. Pardon me. A pastor's wife should not be a silly woman who doesn't take life seriously, because sober also means not only temperate in food, but it also means grave and serious and solemn, of a serious mind or purpose. A man who has a wife who is not moderate and of a serious mind is not fit for the ministry. And then the last qualification that the Bible gives here for a pastor's wife is faithful in all things. Now, this one compasses a lot of things. This is a pretty weighty requirement, isn't it? To be faithful in all things, not just faithful in one or two little things, but faithful in all things. Faithful, when you're speaking of persons, their actions, etc., is full of or characterized by faith, believing. It's also firm in fidelity or allegiance to a person to whom one is bound by any tie, constant, loyal, true. It's also true to one's word or professed belief, abiding by a covenant or promise, steadfast. We use faithful like that all the time. Somebody that sticks to their word, that's a faithful person. He does what he says he's going to do, right? Number four, of persons and their conduct. It's conscientious, thorough in the fulfillment of duty. Somebody that pays attention, that does what they're supposed to do, doesn't leave things undone. And number five, of persons and their actions, that may be believed or relied upon, trustworthy, veracious. So pastor's wife must be full of and characterized by faith and belief of the gospel. In other words, she has to be a believer. And she's got to believe it with all her heart. A pastor's wife must be loyal, true to her word and her beliefs, dutiful and trustworthy. She must be a woman who is steadfast in her convictions. And my wife is a woman of strong principles and convictions. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but she is. She has very strong principles and convictions, and things bother her. When she sees things that go against her convictions, things bother her, because she's an idealist. She's a person of principles and convictions. Now, a man with an unbelieving, unconverted, or untrustworthy wife is not qualified for the ministry. Now, I know there are some churches out there that don't practice this, that they would ordain a man that has an unconverted wife. And you're right. A pastor's wife has to be faithful in all things. If she hasn't taken the first step and gotten baptized, she's not faithful in all things. He should not be in the ministry if he has an unbelieving, unconverted wife. And of course, if she's untrustworthy, who in the world would want a pastor with an untrustworthy wife? So as you can see, that not just any woman is qualified to be a pastor's wife. There are some pretty steep qualifications for it. Now, interestingly, the qualifications to be a pastor's wife are the same as the qualifications to be a pastor, although there are additional pastoral qualifications. And I just noticed this. I don't know why I didn't see it earlier. But in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 11, you'll notice there that verse starts out with two words, "even so." says, even so must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. Even so means in like manner. So just like the deacons, just like the pastor's wife has to be these things too. So she has to meet the same some of the same qualifications as the pastor does. I'll just show you this quickly with these four things. She had to be grave. That was the first thing. Well, the pastor must be grave in that he must have his children in subjection with all gravity. That's in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 4. One that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. And gravity is the quality of being grave, weight, influence, authority. In other words, a pastor has to be grave. He's got to have influence and authority. When he speaks, his children better listen. When he says do this, they better do it. A man would not be qualified for the ministry. If you ever have a pastor, if I drop over dead and somebody comes in here to candidate to be a pastor of this church, and he walks in here and he's got kids running all around, he's like, hey, come here, sit down, and they're just running all around, not paying attention to him, just tell him to go somewhere else. Leave, go somewhere else. You're not qualified. My former pastor refused to ordain a guy that he was considering ordaining because he didn't have control of his own kids. Titus 2 and verse 7 also shows us a pastor has to be grave. Titus 2 and verse 7. In all things showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity. I'm not saying a pastor can never tell a joke. I'm not saying he can't be fun. But a pastor has to be grave. He's got to be serious. He has to be a man of influence. Just like his wife. A pastor must not be a slanderer. Remember, that was her second qualification. Now this one you got to go about, you know, you got to compare some scripture. But given the fact that a pastor has to be blameless and of good behavior, 1 Timothy 3:2, and just and holy, Titus 1 and verse 8, that would preclude him from being a slanderer, would it not? You're not a slanderer. Or if you're a slanderer, you're not blameless, you're not of good behavior, and you're not just and holy. The third qualification, the wife must be sober. Well, the pastor must be sober also. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 2 says, the bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach. Titus 1 and verse 8. But a lover of hospitality, a lover of good men, sober, just, holy, temperate. So he's got to be sober and holy, like I said before. So that means he can't be a slanderer. And a pastor must be faithful. Titus 1 and verse 9. Holding fast the faithful word as he hath been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convince the gainsayers. He has to be faithful because he holds forth the faithful word as he has been taught. When you hold on to the faithful word that you have been taught, you are faithful. You are true to the faith. And that's another thing. If you're looking for a pastor, you see, does this guy hold fast to the faith that he was taught, or is he just itching to get out there and start teaching all kinds of other stuff that he wants to, that he just can't wait to be ordained to do? And some of us know about a pastor that happened to, too. As soon as the guy is ordained, he goes out there and starts teaching a bunch of other crap that he wanted to teach all along and kept it undercover. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 12. 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, 1 Timothy 1 and verse 12. And I thank Christ Jesus our Lord, who hath enabled me, for that he counted me faithful, putting me into the ministry. So a pastor has to be faithful. God looks at a man, he sees this is a faithful man. That's the kind of a man he'll put into the ministry, if he so chooses. And 1 Timothy 2 and verse 2, 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2 says, and the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. So one faithful man has to commit the gospel to other faithful men. That's the propagation of the ministry that I talked about last week. Now, given that some of the qualifications of a pastor are also qualifications for a pastor's wife, it then follows that she will have to bear some of the heavy burdens that he does, because she's under the same qualifications, some of them. And therefore, she's going to bear some of the burdens. And I will give you examples of that in the rest of the sermon. So a pastor's wife has one of the most difficult jobs in the world. This is what I think, anyway. Maybe you can disagree with me, and that's fine. You are free to do that. But I think a pastor's wife has one of the most difficult jobs in the world, and I'm going to give you 15 reasons for that. Reason number one, a pastor's job is his life. Being married to a pastor is difficult because he can't separate his home life from his job. You see, unlike most other jobs and professions, a pastor's ministry is his life, not just something he does to earn a living. You know, for most people, their job is something they do to earn a living. Maybe they like their job, they enjoy it, but it's ultimately something that they do to earn a living. And if somebody just dropped off a few million dollars at their house, chances are they wouldn't be working that job. They'd probably be doing something else that they enjoyed more. Most people would anyway. But for a pastor, his job is not just something he does to earn a living. And by the way, if he does the job to earn a living, go get another job. If you want to be a pastor to earn a living, or if you are a pastor and you figure, well, you know what, I'm just going to stick this out because I need to make a living, go get another job. You do not want a pastor like that that's in it for the money. We're told about pastors that are in it for filthy lucre's sake. Now, I'd say for most people, if your job is your life, you need to get your priorities straightened out. I mean, if your job is your whole life and your whole life is just wrapped up in your job, you know, there's a lot more to life than that. Granted, your job's important. I'm not saying it's not. You should be diligent at it, but your whole life should not be just your job. But for a pastor, it's different. It's therefore hard for the pastor to transition from work time to home time, especially when he works from home like I do. It's hard to transition from work time to home time. I don't have a commute to unwind. I don't have a half an hour drive to get in the car and just kind of let my mind all unwind and just forget about all the crap of the day. I've got a 5-second commute from my office to the living room and then another 3 seconds to the kitchen. That's it. This is hard for a pastor's wife because her husband can't leave his work at the office like some other men can or should. Some people don't leave their work at the office. And you should leave it at the office if you can. And you know what part of the problem is? These stupid smartphones. People put their work email on their smartphone, and then they go home, and they're getting emails from work all night long and all weekend long and when they're on vacation. I used to do that. I wouldn't do it now. I don't even have a smartphone now. But if I did, I wouldn't put my work phone on. I wouldn't put my work email on it. If my company, if you want to pay me 24/7, you want to triple my pay because now you want me to be on call 24/7. If you're going to triple my pay, okay, I'll take this cell phone home and I'll put the email on it. But until you triple my pay, forget about it. Work is not your life. Number two. Her identity is wrapped up in whom she is married to. This is different than most wives. Most wives' identity is not wrapped up in whom she is married to. But that is the case with the pastor's wife. You know, she's often called what? The pastor's wife. That's what I've been calling her in the whole sermon. That's what a lot of people call her. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with calling her that, but that's what she's called. But you know that no other woman is referred to by the profession of her husband, or not very many. I mean, have you ever heard somebody say, oh, you know, the teacher's wife, or the engineer's wife, the lawyer's wife, the janitor's wife, the truck driver's wife? Nobody refers to the woman like that in most professions, do they? But it's that way with the pastor's wife. She may feel like she is only valued because of whom she is married to. Now, this may or may not be true. In some cases, it may be true. She may be only valued because she's married to the pastor. In many cases, it's not true. But regardless if it's true or not, a pastor's wife would struggle with feeling like that's the case, feeling that people are nice to her and, you know, want to spend time with her because she's the pastor's wife, not because of her own identity. Number three, privacy. A pastor and his wife do not have the level of privacy that other church members do. They live in a fishbowl. You know what I mean by that. If you're in a fishbowl, everything's glass. Everybody can see everything. People know a lot about the pastor's wife, the pastor's life, and therefore they know a lot about the pastor's wife's life. This can make the pastor's wife feel like everything she does is being scrutinized. And it's just kind of part of the job in some ways. I often agonize over whether we should take a trip or not, because I always think about what other people are going to think. And are they going to think I'm taking too many trips or I'm away too much? Even though I keep track of, and this is how I solace myself with that, I miss 2 Sundays per year, no more. I had 2 weddings this year I really, really, really wanted to go to. And I did not go to either of them because my 2 Sundays are already up. That's my own personal rule, not your rule. But I do take solace in when I do take trips, because I put in enough hours and I keep track of my hours that by the end of the year, despite the trips that we take, I've got weeks of comp time built up. So I work a lot, probably too much. So that's the way I allow that for myself. But even that being said, there have been times when my wife wanted to go take a little trip somewhere and I'm like, I just can't do it. I'm sorry, we've already gone here, we've gone there. I can't do it. I want to do it. I could do it. But I can't do it because I don't want it to look like I'm just running around all the time and not doing my job. Number 4, lack of close relationships. It is hard for a pastor's wife to make close friendships in the church. And this is due to a number of factors. She has to be careful whom she opens up to. She can't share her problems with other women in the church because she wants to be very careful to protect her husband's reputation. Now, to an extent, this should apply to every woman, but it's much more so applies to the pastor's wife. Most women will likewise not want to open up to her because they're afraid that it might get back to the pastor, which it shouldn't, right? But there, people are afraid. People are people, and they're afraid, oh, if I open up to the pastor's wife, then, oh, the pastor's going to find out, and he's going to be upset, or he's going to be watching me or something. They also may avoid getting close to her because they think she might scrutinize their lives. Well, she's held to a high standard, so I don't want her to know anything that's going on in my life because maybe she will scrutinize me or she will sit in judgment on me. So people want to keep their distance from the pastor's wife. Some people. And she has to kind of maintain her distance from them also. For this reason, many pastors' wives suffer with loneliness. This is definitely something a lot of them suffer with. Number 5, judgment and scrutiny of others. A pastor's wife is conscious of the fact that people will judge, wittingly or unwittingly, every decision she makes and everything she does. Why doesn't she have a job? If you ever ask yourself that question, you haven't paid one bit of attention to my sermons for the last 8 years. Why did she buy that? Why did she do that? It's just natural. That's what happens. People often have higher expectations of the pastor's wife than they should. She therefore feels a lot of pressure because she knows her actions will affect the ministry and reputation of her husband, of the pastor. You see, it only takes a little folly to sully a pastor's reputation for wisdom and honor. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 1. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 1. It says, dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. It doesn't take much to ruin or at least make a pastor's reputation questionable. And then that extends, of course, to his wife. If my wife were to do something foolish and stupid, guess what? It would come back on me, wouldn't it? It would be on her, but it would also be on me. You'd say, well, the pastor's wife did that? What kind of a pastor is that? So it puts her under a lot of pressure. Now, if the pastor has very high personal standards, as I do, then people will be watching him and his wife very carefully to see if they can spot hypocrisy. You say, oh, no, nobody would ever do that. Yes, they would. And you know what? I don't blame them. I have experienced this. I even had a man admit that he did it. Told me even before it all blew up that, I forget how he said it, but when we had kids, he would be watching very, very carefully because I've been very outspoken about child training. And I knew full well, if the time came that we had kids, I knew that I would be under a microscope by the church members. I was okay with that. I was all right with that. But then the man told me also, this is right before he left the church, he told me that he had tried his hardest to find hypocrisy in me. He had been watching me like a hawk to see if he could find hypocrisy in me. And thank God he didn't. I was thankful to hear that from an enemy telling me that he looked as hard as he could to find hypocrisy in me and couldn't find it. Not to say that I'm perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but there wasn't some glaring thing like, well, pastor says this and he does the totally opposite thing, right? But this can make it very stressful for a pastor's wife. Because when I hold high standards, then she's held to high standards in your minds, too. Like, for instance, the masks. Everybody knows from the very beginning, day one, I was opposed to masks. I said from day one, I will not wear a mask. This is long before the mandates ever came out. When I saw these crazy people in China wearing all these stupid masks, I laughed at it. And as soon as I saw people wearing masks here, I said, I will not wear a mask. I will not change my behavior. I will not social distance. I won't wear gloves. You remember people wearing that, doing that dumb stuff. I won't do any of it. Well, I didn't tell my wife that she can't wear a mask. As a matter of fact, I told her when she was kind of stressing about it, and I said, hey, you don't have to. If you want to wear a mask, go ahead. And she says, no, I can't. She didn't want to, but she just felt pressure to do it. She said, no, I'm your husband, and if the church sees me wearing a mask when they know that you've come out so hard against them, it's going to make you look bad, that your own wife doesn't even keep your standard. And I thank God for having a wife like that. And that made her life difficult, more difficult than it would have been. The pastor has to be an example to the believers. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word and conversation and charity and spirit and faith and purity. So in all areas and aspects of life, I need to be an example. In Titus 2 and verse 7, it says, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works and doctrine showing uncorruptness and gravity, sincerity. So in all things showing thyself a pattern. So I need to be an example to you in all things, which is a weighty responsibility. I mean, it's hard enough to try to do the right thing yourself, but then to be an example for other people is difficult. Well, naturally, the pastor's wife is going to be an example as well because we're one flesh. If I'm an example, she's an example. I'm an example of you, to you, of marriage. She's half of that marriage, right? She's an example to you also. She must be extra careful how she represents her life with her husband in public, because lots of people are watching and looking to them as examples. And for pastors' wives with children, their parenting skills will be under the microscope by some church members. And that's a fact. And really, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I don't think people should be overly harsh in their judgments, but to look at the pastor and his wife as examples of raising children, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And, you know, if the pastor's kids are running around and it's a madhouse, I mean, they ought to say, hey, you know what? You're supposed to be an example, and you're not doing what the Bible says here at all. Your kids are out of control. But it does put them under a lot of pressure, because everybody's kids are going to act up. Everybody's kids are going to spill milk all over the carpet in the church or something or whatever. You know, I mean, stuff is going to happen. And then it happens to the pastor's wife, and everybody's watching, and she feels a lot of pressure because of that. When other people screw up, it's just like, well, you know, everybody screws up. When the pastor's wife screws up, it's like, well, the pastor's wife just screwed up, right? I mean, it's a bigger deal, isn't it? Regardless if it should be, it is. Number six, time. A pastor's wife feels like she has to share her husband with other people all the time. Since most church members work during the day on weekdays, the only time they have to call or meet with the pastor is in the evenings or on Saturdays. Now, I take Saturdays off, and I know I'm like the only pastor on the planet that I've ever even heard of that takes Saturdays off, but that's what I do. That's my day off. I was just used to it out in the regular world, and I just like doing that. Now, the pastor feels like he needs to take people's calls during those times, but that cuts into her time with him. Now, I'm not telling you not to call me in the evenings or on Saturdays. You know, if that's the only time you have to call, then that's fine. That's just the way it is. But she struggles with feelings that the rest of the church members are more important to her husband than she is. Because you'll take their calls. I mean, I'm spending time with you right now tonight, and somebody calls, and you got to go take their call. They're more important to you than I am. I'm a church member too, she thinks. Why are they more important than I am? That's hard for her. No, it just depends. If I'm spending specific time with her and we are doing something together, like not just sitting around, then no, I don't take the call. Or I shouldn't. I probably have. But I normally don't and I shouldn't. Number seven, being treated differently than other church members. A pastor's wife doesn't feel like just another church member. She's held to a higher standard than other women are, as I've already gone over. In many ways, she's held to the same standard as a pastor, but she's not a pastor. And she's not been given that gift bestowed upon her that he has. So she's under the same responsibility in some ways, same requirements that he is. People are looking to her as an example, or people are watching and scrutinizing her just like the pastor, except she's not the pastor. She hasn't been given the gift of the pastor. She doesn't have the office of the ministry. She doesn't have the Spirit of God that's upholding her in that office. She doesn't have all that he has, but yet she's in the same position in some ways as he is. Because she must maintain a high level of faithfulness and duty to God, she notices and is disappointed when others' conduct doesn't match their creed. Because the more mature you are in your Christian walk, the more you're going to notice things that aren't right. But unlike the pastor, she doesn't have a pulpit to exhort and admonish the brethren. I do. When I see stuff that ain't right, guess what? I preach on it. I can get up there and I see something, and I'll do a sermon on it. She doesn't have a pulpit. And as I've told you before, when I preach on something, consider it personal counseling. Because I'm not going to sit you down every little thing and have a one-on-one with you. If I preach on it and it applies to you, consider it personal counseling. That's how I do the majority of my counseling. Number eight, lack of acknowledgement. The pastor gets a lot of attention and recognition. And most pastors are pretty spoiled. I know that I am. I think so. If I come down with a cold, some of you would be as concerned about me as if I just announced that I had stage 4 cancer. I mean, I am spoiled. There's no doubt about that. But his wife, who stands in the background and supports him and helps him to be the man that he is and to do what he does, often gets little attention or recognition. And this happens, like I said, I'm not saying all these things are true of every pastor's wife, but this happens in churches where the pastor gets all the focus, all the attention, and his wife is the reason why he can do a lot of what he does, and she's just off in the background, and she gets very little, if any. Number 9, keeping quiet. It's important for a pastor's wife to be discreet and keep quiet about situations in the church. She must be cautious about offering her opinions about things with church members, especially if those opinions differ from her husband's. See, because I'm not talking about doctrinal issues here, but there could be things where a pastor and his wife, just like every husband and wife, have differing opinions on things. But when it's the pastor's wife and the pastor has an opinion on something, and if he's made his opinion vocal and public, for her to say, well, you know, I don't really agree with him on that, but she shouldn't do that. She just has to keep quiet about that. And that's something that pastors' wives do suffer with. She cannot tell other members about problems that she has with her husband. You think, well, I'm just floored. I didn't know that pastors and their wives ever have any problems. I thought their marriages are just perfect. Well, you're learning something new every day, aren't you? She doesn't have people to share her problems with like other women do. If she tells a woman in the church about a fight she had with her husband, she will, that is the pastor's wife, will forget about it in a day or two, but the other woman will remember it forever. Forever. It's true. Imagine, let me give you an illustration. Imagine if you sat down with the president's wife and you're chatting it up over tea and she's like, you know what? My husband and I just had some big blowout fight yesterday and he screamed at me and he's such a jerk and I was just so mad at him and I couldn't believe what he said to me. It was just so rude. Are you ever going to forget what she just told you? Never. You will never forget in all your life. You're going to remember the president and his wife just had a fight and he yelled at her. You will never forget that. She'll forget about it tomorrow because it's going to happen again in a day or two. And, you know, that's old news. Maybe, I'm just kidding. But you'll never forget about it, though. And it's the same with the pastor's wife. You know, this could tarnish the reputation of her husband. She must always hold her husband in high regard to others. She must always support him unless he's in clear error. She must never put him down in front of others. And for that matter, no woman should do this to her husband. Like I said, a lot of these things are true of all women. They're just more important that a pastor's wife makes sure to do them. Number 10, not becoming resentful of her husband. You see, a pastor must preach the perfect standard of the Word of God concerning all things. I've got to get up here and I've got to preach the standard. And I've got to preach the standard of a husband and the standard of a wife and the standard of a pastor and the standard of everything. I've got to preach the perfect standard. But guess what? This is going to be something new to you that you didn't know either. The pastor is a man with a sinful nature, just like you. And the preacher doesn't always practice what he preaches. Now, I'm not saying I just go out there and just intentionally live like a hypocrite, but I can't fully practice what I preach, obviously, because I preach a perfect standard. The only man that ever lived that could fully practice what he preached was Jesus Christ. No other man can. So a pastor's wife will sometimes have to fight feelings of resentment when her husband preaches about how Christians should act, but then doesn't live up to that standard. The pastor's wife must nevertheless be respectful and honoring towards him in public and private so that she doesn't tarnish his reputation in the eyes of the church. Number 11, fighting the urge to be curious. If her husband gets a call from a church member, even though she perceives that something is wrong, she must mind her own business. It's none of her business. But you know, that's hard. When you hear a phone call and maybe you heard a word or two or something and you're curious about who it was or what's going on, it's hard not to be curious. But her husband can't share problems he's dealing with at work with her like other husbands can. You know, most husbands, you got a problem at work, you can come home and say, oh, you know, this guy did this and that guy did that, and, you know, he's trying to screw me, and he, you know, yeah, it doesn't matter, right? You know, she doesn't know who they are, you know, whatever. But I can't just come to her with all my problems and say, oh, you know, brother so-and-so is doing this, sister so-and-so is doing this, and, you know, I can't come to her with my problems. Now, thankfully, I don't have a lot of problems in this church. That is a blessing. Yet. I don't have a problem yet. The calm before the storm only lasts so long, of course. She must be content to not know things that she wishes that she could. It's hard for all of us to fight being curious. I remember there was a situation, I'm not going to tell you what it was, I'll make you curious, but there was a situation up in Minneapolis where something happened. And people were aware of this thing happened, and I'm not going to divulge too much information. But anyway, people were aware of something that happened, but I couldn't tell them what had happened. And it was just kind of, it was under the bridge. It didn't have to do with members of the church. And some person asked me, what happened with that? And I said, I can't tell you. And he's just like, but I want to know so bad. And I'm like, I can't tell you. I'm sorry. It's hard to not be curious. Number 12. Here's something that's really hard for pastors' wives. Witnessing her husband being attacked and hated. She has to endure the pain of knowing that people hate her husband and are trying to destroy him and run the church. And that has happened in other churches. It hasn't happened in this church, thankfully, but it's happened in other churches. Like the previous one that I pastored. I wouldn't say the man hated me, but he was certainly attacking my doctrine and would have had me excluded from the church if the church would have sided with him. But this has happened to other pastors' wives, that they have to deal with the fact that they may not know all the details, they don't know what's going on, but they know that there's somebody in that church that hates their husband and is trying their hardest to destroy that man, and that's happened. She must keep it to herself, and she can't share it with her friends in the church. Number 13, being used to get information about situations in the church. Some women in the church will ask the pastor's wife about things that are going on in the church rather than asking the pastor. This puts her in a very difficult position. Now, calling the pastor's wife about what's, you know, what we're bringing to the potluck or something like that, that's fine. But calling her to ask about what's happening in the church is not. That is not her position to be divulging that information if she even knows it. In such cases, she needs to learn to be nice but firm and tell them that if they have a question about a situation in the church, they need to call the pastor, not call her. Number 14. Winding it down here. Being used for pastoral counsel. Some members of the church will try to use the pastor's wife for pastoral counsel. They view her as a free counselor to unload their problems on. I read an article about pastors' wives, and this is one of the things that he talked about, that especially in larger churches where, you know, the pastor's wife comes into church and it's just one lady after another just dumping all these problems on her, thinking that she's some kind of a counselor or something that they can put all their problems on, and she can solve for them. I want you to remember this. The pastor's wife is not the pastor. She is not the pastor. Do not come to her for pastoral counsel. Come to the pastor. Now, it's fine to come to the pastor's wife as a friend. If you're a friend of the pastor's wife and you come to her as a friend and you talk about struggles in your life with her as a friend, that's okay. But don't come to her for pastoral counsel. If there's something you ought to be coming to the pastor about, go to the pastor. Don't go to the pastor's wife. Now, number 15 is basically going to summarize most of what I've already said. She has to deal with many of the same hardships that the pastor deals with. She lives in a fishbowl under the scrutiny of the church, similarly to the way that he does. She must be very careful what she says because she knows that people are listening, just as the pastor has to. She is guarded in how much she opens up to people because there are some people who would use it against her or the pastor. And that's a fact. There are just some people out there. They're just nasty people. And sometimes you don't know who the nasty people are until they expose themselves. And there are people out there that if the pastor's wife opened up and told her problems, her personal problems or problems she has with her husband or something, guess what? When that person gets a bee in their bonnet, that stuff's all going to be spread around the church. And she has to be guarded about that. She finds it hard to have close friendships in the church due to the nature of her position, similar to how the pastor does. It's hard for a pastor to have close friendships in the church, too, for the same reason. And there's just, with a pastor, there's just a natural separation. Paul said that he was called, separated under the gospel of Christ. There is a separation, and there has to be a separation. And a pastor would be unwise to be close friends with a lot of people in the church because familiarity breeds contempt. That's just the way it is. She sees the difficulty that her husband has to bear, and to an extent she bears them too because they're one flesh. She has to deal with some people who want to get close to her to be able to influence the pastor. And don't kid yourself, this happens in churches. People get close to the pastor's wife hoping to influence him. If you want to influence the president and you're some lobbyist, what do? Get close to his cabinet members. Put a bug in their ear, and what do? Then they influence the president, right? So you want to influence the pastor? Influence the pastor's wife. I had people in a previous church that thought that decisions that I made were because of my wife. They were blaming it on my wife. Oh, it's because of his wife. She didn't want to live here anymore. She wanted to move somewhere else, blah, blah, blah. Wasn't true. But, didn't stop them from making stuff up. Some people try to use her to relay messages to the pastor because they don't want to tell him themselves. Don't do that. Don't relay messages to me through my wife because you don't want to tell me yourself. The pastor's wife is not a messenger for the pastor. Don't tell my wife things to tell me. Tell me yourself. If you're going to miss church, call me up and tell me yourself. Don't tell my wife to tell me that you're going to miss church. Call me. I'm the pastor, not her. Don't tell my wife things hoping that it'll get back to me. Tell me yourself. Some people like to do that. They like to put a bug in the pastor's ear, say something, and just hope that the pastor's wife will go and tell her husband about it. And then in a roundabout way, they got the information that they wanted to the pastor without actually telling him. Maybe they're trying to get him information about somebody else in the church, but they don't want to tell him, so they tell his wife, and then hopefully she tells him. Don't do that. And the pastor's wife has to deal with the reality that some people do not want to get close to her because they fear that if they do, she may report their behavior to the pastor. They just want to stay away, because if I get too close, well, She's going to be the pastor's little spy, and she's going to be telling everything she sees. I don't want to get close to her. The pastor's wife bears many of the same burdens as the pastor, but she does not reap many of the blessings and benefits that he does. That's the thing. She gets all the bad stuff and very little of the good. There's a lot of bad stuff that comes with being a pastor. It's not an easy job, but there are a lot of blessings with it. And I'm thankful for it. But she gets all everything that's bad about it, she gets. All the good stuff that I get, no, she didn't get any of that. She doesn't get to teach people things. She doesn't get to see the joy of having taught somebody and seeing their conversion, of helping somebody through something. She doesn't get all that. So, let me just end with this. What can you do for your pastor's wife? To paraphrase John F. Kennedy, ask not what your pastor's wife can do for you, but what you can do for your pastor's wife. You know what I'm talking about. Number one, I got five things. Number one, pray for her. And I have appreciated it when I have heard people pray for my wife. I know I've heard Wayne pray for my wife on different occasions when he prays for the pastor and his wife. I appreciate that. But pray for her. Number two, don't have unreasonable and unbiblical expectations of her. She's just a woman. She's not superwoman. She's not the immaculately conceived Virgin Mary, which neither was the Virgin Mary. Don't have unreasonable and unbiblical expectations ever. Number three, appreciate her and remember that the pastor couldn't do what he does without her. Let me tell you what, having her gone is hard. And she made she made 60 meals for me, lunch and dinner. So all I have to do is warm it up and do the dishes. And it's still hard. It still takes a lot more time. I am serious. I mean, I was kind of joking the other day, but it does. It takes a lot more time. When all I have to do is walk out, eat, and walk back, that doesn't take much time. When I have to thaw things out and warm them up and do the dishes and all this stuff and water the plants and whatever else, take a whole litany of supplements different times a day and look at the schedule, and I can do all this stuff. I don't have somebody to say, hey, take this, take that. It takes a lot more time. And if I had to cook for myself, heaven help me, I don't know what I'd do. I'd be terrible. I can't even imagine. I wouldn't have any time to do anything. Number four, try to understand her and realize that there are reasons why she acts the way she does. If you haven't noticed, my wife is a little different. She's different. She recognizes that. I recognize that. She's just a little bit different. And you're just going to have to learn to live with that. I mean, we're all a little bit different. But just try to understand and know that there are reasons why she acts and does the things that she does. It might seem a little strange to you, but there are reasons. And number five, be friendly with her, but give her space and respect the boundaries that she sets. Be friendly, but respect the boundaries that she sets. What I don't want you to do, and that's why I wanted to do it when she wasn't here, I don't want after church to have 15 people surrounding her and everybody trying to be real super nice to her or something. That's not what I want at all. So I think, you know, if you do these things, it may help a little bit. And I didn't do this sermon because, you know, she's on the verge of a nervous breakdown or something like that. I just did it because I thought that there are plenty of things about a pastor's wife that you probably don't realize. And I wanted to make you aware of things that you might not have been aware of otherwise. So I thank you for your kind and patient attention this morning.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.